My sermon title this morning is, How Much Do You Want? Jimmy, whatever are you doing? I'm putting my money in here. I want to take it to Sunday school. You mean you're going to take all of that money? I don't think so, Jimmy. But I want to give it all to Jesus, and I didn't know if you would give me a bag, so I'm going to take my cup with my money for Jesus. But Jimmy, there's money in there that you got for your birthday, and Grandpa sent you money for Christmas. You don't want to give it all, do you? Yes. Oh, Mommy, I want to give it all to Jesus. We ask God, how much? How much do you want? God wants our hearts. Mark 12:28-31 says, One of the teachers of the law came and heard them debating. Noticing that Jesus had given them a good answer, he asked Jesus, Of all the commandments, which is the most important? The most important one, answered Jesus, is this, The Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your strength. The second is this, Love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these. Now, the Pharisees and Sadducees had come to test Jesus, as they often tried to. They tried to trap him by their questions. They were strong on tradition, carrying out all the physical activities in the forms of worship so they could be seen by men. So Jesus said to them in Mark 12:24, Are you not in error because you do not know the scriptures or the power of God? Jesus may as well have been talking to Jimmy's mother, because she might not have known the scriptural teaching on giving, nor did she recognize the power of God. In verse 28, one of the men, who was a student and a teacher of the law, questioned Jesus, perhaps not tempting him, but desiring to improve himself, he asked, Of all the commandments, which is the first and most important? Not the first in order of commandments, but which should he consider foundational for our obedience? Jesus gave him a direct answer to his inquiry. I think that we can conclude that those followers, us included, who sincerely desire to be instructed concerning our obedience, God will guide our judgment as he did the teacher of the law. In verse 29, Christ said, Love the Lord your God. Let's think about that for a moment. Love is the leading affection of our souls. It is the most, should I not stand by this? I'm getting a little humming background. Maybe the rest of you aren't. Okay. Love is the motivational factor for our affections and actions. Husbands and wives do nice things for each other out of love. We discipline our children, besides our biological children, also children of the Lord, such as those in Children's Church, Kingdom Kids, in Vacation Bible School, and camps. We discipline them out of love. We do things for others because we love God, whether it be family, neighbors, or friends. Loving God will arm us against all those things that rival our attention, and there are plenty of them. Loving God helps us to do the right things so he will be honored, and things with which he will be pleased. So maybe you're thinking, how do we learn to love God more? One, we'll want to spend time with him by reading the Bible. And there are so many translations nowadays that it's easy, so much easier to understand the scriptures than it used to be. Secondly, we'll have a great desire to get to know him better. Thirdly, we'll appreciate his creation. And sometimes, most of the time, this takes us a little extra time to go out and appreciate that morning sunrise. Or for some of you, you might be driving home from work and see the morning sunrise. Or the evening sunset. Or to walk out at night in the dark sky, darkness, and see this, all the stars. Or appreciating the green grass now after all of this rain. We need to learn to appreciate his creation. Another thing, we'll sing praises to him. And we will pray to him. We learn to love God by praying to him. As we do these things, our love will grow and we will trust him more. In verse 29, it says to love God with all our hearts, our mind, our soul, and our strength. That about says it all, doesn't it? Complete, complete devotion. That is the basis, the foundation of our lives. The things we think, the things we speak, and the things that we do. We might ask God again, how much do you want? How much do you want of our time and our energy? How will God know that we love him wholeheartedly? We need to put him first and trust him, just as little Jimmy was doing. In Mark 8:34, Jesus said, we must deny self. In verses 35 through 37 in that same chapter, it reads like this. Jesus speaking, for whoever wants to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their own soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? So, what is that thing that prevents us, your life and mine, that prevents us from giving more time and energy to God? This question comes up occasionally in our Sunday school class. And one of the answers that usually comes up most often is, life in general, things happen, busyness. Well, yes, but could it be the TV watching or my computer, too much time on Facebook or tweeting, my iPhone, or how about my pastime, extra time that I might have? Do I spend too much time reading or gardening? Exercising too much? Cooking? Baking? How much time do you want, God? From what we read in the scriptures, he wants our whole lives to glorify him. At work, and I know from Sunday school class discussions that sometimes it's pretty tough at work. At worship and play, he wants our whole lives to glorify him. Maybe you don't have much extra time for whatever or whenever God calls you. But one person said, God often begins with what we have or what we give him, and he multiplies it as he did with the feeding of the 5,000. The feeding of the 5,000 is found in Mark 6, and I want to read. I don't like that. I want to read from Mark 6. About the feeding of the 5,000. And I'd like for you to listen to this like you have never heard this story before. You've never heard this, and so this is the first time. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. Now, I don't know about you if you know very much about sheep or not. I grew up on a dairy farm and we did not have sheep, but I have read quite a bit about sheep since then. And they need a leader. They follow their instincts for the flock. Jesus said the crowds were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. Well, by this time it was late in the day. So his disciples came to Jesus and they said, "This is a remote place. And it's already very late. Send the people away so they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat." But Jesus answered, "You give them something to eat." Then they said to him, "That would take 8 months' wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat?" "Well, how many loaves do you have?" said Jesus. "Go and see." When they found out, they brought them to Jesus and they said, 5 loaves and 2 fish. Then Jesus directed them to have all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and he broke the loaves. Then he gave them to his disciples to set before all of the people. He also divided the 2 fish among them. And they all ate, 5,000. They all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces of bread and fish. The number of the men who had eaten was 5,000, but there were probably women and children there too. You notice when I read it said, Jesus took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and he looked up to heaven, and he gave thanks, and he broke the loaves. He gave thanks. It does not say Jesus asked God to multiply the fish and the loaves, but he just gave thanks for what there was there, and it was multiplied. You know, and as I read that story this week and was preparing, I thought about my life on the farm and my mom and dad always having extra people for meals. Many times, former members would come back to visit my home church, and mom or dad, one of them, would invite them out for Sunday dinner. Now, we already had eight around the table. There were 6 of us kids and mom and dad. But they would invite other people to come, too. Mother would always think, "I'll just throw some more, peel a couple more potatoes and throw it in the pot." And you know, there was always enough. God multiplied that food, so there was always enough. God can still do that with the little that we offer him today. I remember a friend visiting a couple women a couple weeks ago. One woman had turned 100 years old, and the other one was 89, out here at Crestview. It was just a short visit, but those women were so grateful to have somebody come and visit them. This woman left, thinking that she had bettered their day. But then she noticed that they and God had blessed her abundantly by going to see them. Our expectations of what God can do are often way too small. The God of the Exodus and parting of the Red Sea is still powerful today. He can take our time and our energy and multiply it and use it mightily for his kingdom. I remember sometimes, particularly in the summer and the fall, when I was working outdoors a lot, we had our revitalization planning meetings on Tuesday evenings. And when Kevin first told us, all of us, about that through emails and so on, he encouraged people to come if they were interested in seeing the church grow. And he said there would be meetings once a month for 2 years. And if we wanted to be a part of that, we could start coming on Tuesday nights. Well, let me tell you, there were some times after working outside and pulling weeds in my flower garden and mowing. Dean does most of the mowing with a riding mower, so I can't give any credit for that. But helping in the garden, sometimes I would be very tired. And I would think, oh, that meeting's tonight after dinner. But I would wash up and I would come. And you know what? I would hardly even enter the door, and my energy level went up. God multiplied my energy by just coming and being faithful to him. When Moses, in Exodus 4, insisted that he needed a sign to take with him, God asked him what was already in his hand. Now, God was telling Moses, just giving Moses some instructions out in the desert, that Moses was to return to Egypt and to lead his people. He told Moses that he wanted Moses to say certain things, and Moses objected. And he said, I'm not a man of much speech. I'll probably have trouble talking. Do you know what God said to him? Who made your mouth? Who made your mouth? In other words, all things are possible with God. It's probably sinful to say I can't do that when God is asking us to do something. I've told the members in our Sunday school class that it's amazing that I'm standing up here before you this morning, because this is the same young girl that would stand in front of an English class giving a book report with my paper jiggling like this because I would be so nervous. And if I didn't have it all written down, forget it, because I certainly could not remember. I couldn't remember them, and the memory's worse now, let me tell you. But Moses said that he couldn't speak. But God said, who made your mouth? And God gave him a plan for Moses and his brother Aaron to help him. God asked Moses what was in his hand. And Moses said, a staff. So God turned that staff into a snake. Of course, Moses dropped it, and the snake crawled around on the ground. Moses probably backed up, just like most of us would. And then God said, reach over and take it by the tail. Moses obeyed God and took the snake by its tail, and it became stiff and came back to the staff. And God told Moses that he should use that staff to convince the Israelites that God was the one who had told Moses what to do, that God was in charge. Yes, God often begins with what we already have. See, Moses already had the staff in his hand. God often begins with what we already have and then multiplies it. He normally takes the ordinary things of our lives and transforms them for his honor. If we are willing to give of our time and energy, he will help us budget our time, and there will be time and energy left to serve him. He can do as he did for the Israelites in the desert when they had no food. He gave them manna. Remember, they complained because they were hungry, and it was his plan to give them manna. He told them as they got up in the morning, they were to go around and collect the manna that was laying on the ground, collect enough for that day. He said, don't take any more than what you'll need for one day, but take plenty for that day. You know, the scriptures tells us that there were a few of them that were a little selfish, and they took more than they needed. And you know what happened the next morning when they got up and were going to use some of that? It was all moldy. They had disobeyed God. Because the next morning, he provided new manna. The new manna was all over the ground again. They had disobeyed him, some of them, by sneaking a little bit more than they needed. And he said, take enough for that day. You know, and he may do the same with us. He may give us just enough energy or time to accomplish that particular project or purpose and no more. Or he may do like he did with the feeding of the 5,000, and he may give us way more than we need for that particular lesson preparation or project done for his glory. You know, sometimes we limit ourselves in giving time and energy because of the influence of the world. That reminds me what Jesus said about the yeast of the Pharisees. His followers were not to be influenced by the Pharisees' way of thinking and doing things. Jesus wanted them to have a mind of their own. So what he said this about the Pharisees: you have eyes, but you're not seeing. You have ears, but you're not hearing. We need to work at really seeing and really hearing. People may be calling for help, and we can't hear them because we're otherwise occupied. Those needing help may be our very own children, our neighbors, our fellow workers, our friends, or even our spouses. James 4:7 talks about sins of omission. It says, "To him that knows to do good and doesn't do it, it is sin." To him that knows to do good and doesn't do it, it is sin. How much time and energy does God want? He wants all of our lives to glorify him. Thirdly, now we've talked about God wanting our hearts, wanting our time and our energy. We ask God, how much do you want? He wants our money. Proverbs 3:9 says, "Honor the Lord with your wealth." Now, in the Old Testament, God requested that the Israelites give him tithes and offerings. Exodus 23:19 reads like this: "Bring the best of the first fruits of your soil and your labor to the house of the Lord." God used these terms because most of them were farmers and planted crops and had flocks and herds. So he's saying, bring the first fruits of your soil and your labor to the house of the Lord. The first fruits was the best, the finest from their harvest, and the finest of their animals. 2 Chronicles 31:5 tells us that the Israelites at that time gave generously. Listen to what it says. "As soon as the order went out, the Israelites generously gave the first fruits of their grain, the new wine, the olive oil, and honey, and all that the fields produced. They brought a great amount, a tithe of everything." Some translations say tithes and offerings. Now, these were used mostly for the upkeep of the temple and for the priests and the Levites who did not farm the crops or raise the animals. Now, what is a tithe? It's usually considered a tenth of their harvest or a tenth of their flocks and herds. Unger's Bible Dictionary says this about the tithe: "The tithe was paid to Jehovah God, a practical confession and acknowledgement that the whole land and all the possessions in general belonged to him, and that it was God alone who conferred them upon those who enjoyed them." So all the land and possessions are God's anyway. Through the years, however, with the Israelites, their devotion in paying back to God wavered. Kind of sad how much he blessed their lives. But we read many places in the New Testament their devotion wavered. But about 450 BC, much of Israel no longer practiced giving the tithe from their crops, nor their flocks, nor their herds to God. Many, if they gave, they gave the leftovers. God was not pleased. So he spoke to them. We can read about that in Malachi, chapter 3, verses 8 through 10. He saw what they were doing, and this was what God said to them: "Will a mere mortal man rob God? Yet you rob me. But you ask, how are we robbing you? In tithes and offerings," said God. "You are under a curse, your whole nation, because you are robbing me. Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. Test me in this," the Lord Almighty said, "and test me and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that there will not be room enough to store it." What a promise. God would send a great blessing upon them when they obeyed and tithed. Did this practice continue during New Testament times And what about now, 2017? Does God still want our money? Does he want our tithe? Many places in the New Testament says that people brought their tithes and offerings. So it appears that they sometimes brought more than a tenth, when they say the tithes and offerings. In Mark 12:17, when asked about paying taxes, Jesus said to give back to Caesar, or the government, what is due, and also give to God what is God's. In Luke 21:1-4, we once again see Jesus talking about giving. I'll read these verses. As Jesus looked up, he saw the rich putting their gifts into the temple treasury. He also saw a poor widow put in two very small copper coins. Truly, I tell you, he said, this poor widow has put in more than all the others. All these people gave their gifts out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in all she had to live on. Why do we pass the offering containers every week during the worship service? Because it gives us the opportunity to give of our first fruits, our tithes and offerings. When we deposit the check from our employer, whether it be weekly or monthly, in the bank, we take out, according to the scriptures, we should take out a tenth first and give back to God what is his. Then we use the rest for paying bills, groceries, etc. Some say, oh, I can't afford a tithe. I remember, as a kid, hearing that discussion between my dad and one of the ladies of our church. His couple was good friends of ours. And they were out to our farm. This lady was Jane Coppin. She was an elder's wife. They were discussing the finances of the local church and tithing. Jane's comment was, oh, Floyd, my dad, oh, Floyd, we believe in tithing. We just can't afford it. I can still hear the voice of my dad saying, Jane, you can't afford not to. We were taught in our home that tithing was giving back to God. If God blessed us with energy and an opportunity to work and get paid, my parents told us that we should set at least a tenth apart for God. Whether it was my sister and I babysitting, or my brothers mowing the lawn, helping the neighboring farmers, etc., all six of us kids were taught what the scripture says about giving back to God what is his. And I am so grateful for that early training. Sometimes, when I was in college, when Dean and I were first married, finances were very tight. But God's part came out of our paycheck first. And he took care of us. Hebrews 13:5 warns us again about putting too much value on our worldly possessions. It says, keep your lives free from the love of money, and be content with what you have, because God has said, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. At the beginning of my message, we read to love the Lord your God with all your heart, your mind, your soul, and your strength. Giving back to God evolves from our love for him. What we give to the Lord here at Hayes Christian Church goes to missions. We have a little mission report every Sunday morning. It goes to one of those seven missions. It goes to educational materials for Sunday school, Kingdom Kids, Vacation Bible School, and other children's ministries, plus the maintenance of the church property and salaries for our pastor and part-time secretary and music leader. You know, I recently read in the February Christian Standard these statistics. It said, today, 90% of pastors feel financial stress in their family and church work. 76% of pastors know other pastors who left the ministry due to financial pressures. 31% of pastors work a second job to make ends meet. And almost 60% of pastors do not receive health insurance or retirement funds from their church. Now that's a sad commentary on Christians giving back to God, I think. When God said in Malachi that he would throw open the floodgates of heaven and bless believers beyond our comprehension, that is a magnificent blessing that we would get from nowhere else. Hebrews 13:6 says in the NIV translation, it says, "And do not forget to do good and share with others, for with such sacrifices God is pleased." Now that was the NIV translation. I decided to look it up in the Message too, and this is what it says in the Message, another translation. "Make sure you don't take things for granted and go slack in working for the common good. Share what you have with others. God takes particular pleasure in acts of worship, a different kind of sacrifice." I like what author Philip Keller says, and I had mentioned this earlier. God often begins with what we have. He takes what we bring him, and he multiplies it. I think this holds true whether it be our time, our energy, or our money. When Jesus said to love God with all of our heart, mind, soul, and strength, he meant the whole person, including one's finances. People used to joke and tell preachers, "Be sure that fella has his billfold in his back pocket when you baptize him," indicating, of course, that his mind would be changed and he would increase his giving to the church. The March Christian Standard reported that in 2015, approximately 63 million Americans volunteered for benevolent causes. They worked a total of 7.9 billion hours, worth about $184 million. People who volunteer are almost twice as likely to donate money as non-volunteers. However, it also pointed out, to listen to this carefully, it also pointed out that only about 2% of the United States' gross domestic product is given to charitable causes. I think that must make God sad and disappointed that one of the richest nations in the world would be so unappreciative of his blessings. Jesus reminded his hearers some of the things he had done for them while on earth in Matthew 10, verse 8. He could heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those who have leprosy, drive out demons. And after he said all this, he said, "Freely you have received, freely give." How has God blessed each one of us here this morning? How has he blessed you? I'm afraid the list would be so long, we would not have enough paper to write it all down. Paul reminded the Corinthians about giving and what their attitude should be in 2 Corinthians 9:7. He said, "Each of you should give what you have decided in your heart to give, not reluctantly." Excuse me, my notes got a little mixed up here. I guess I left one page at home. Okay, well, I was almost done anyway. He said not to give reluctantly, but what your heart would tell you to give. So how about you and I, here and now, in April 2017? Will we give him what is left, or will we trust him and give of our first fruits before we use the paycheck for anything else? Freely you have received, freely give.
You've been listening to Betty Rep at Hayes Christian Church. Hayes Christian Church is a non-denominational fellowship in Hayes, Kansas. We are supported by the generosity of our members, attenders, and friends. The financial support we raise goes to projects which further spread the gospel to those who do not yet know Jesus, to local, national, and international missions, and they help to keep these podcasts free. If you'd like to share a monetary gift with us, please visit our webpage at hayeschristianchurch.org and click on the Donate button. Or you may mail your gift to P.O. Box 1111, Hayes, Kansas, 67601. If you have questions, comments, or would like more information, we would love to hear from you. Simply go to our webpage and click on the Contact Us form. Thank you for your generosity, and may God bless you as you seek to follow Him.